Welcome to the podcast that puts a finger on the pulse of medicine and technology. On this show, you'll hear from investors, industry executives, and healthcare providers on the science and business of medicine. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and this is the State of MedTech. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This week, I got a special guest from the sales world. That's Jamil. You might know him as Jay Pendleton. Jay is a MedTech sales exec who's held a variety of positions in sales and leadership. He's been at companies like Medtronic, NuVasive, and most recently, he's the VP of sales at Vizion. And he stood out to me on LinkedIn because he's one of the very few people who I saw utilizing LinkedIn the right way, from creating posts about his time in the field and, of course, like customer success posts, but more importantly, sharing a lot of personal and self-development posts. He's also the host and founder of a great show called The Sultan of Sales, which is a podcast and YouTube channel. I highly recommend you check it out, where he helps salespeople develop the skills for them to go to the next level. So this episode, we cover a lot about not just Jay's story, but more importantly, we talk sort of, you know, leader to leader about what is this new normal of doing remote sales and using digital to influence and grow your territory. So there's a lot of great pearls in this episode. I know you'll love it. So be sure to check it out. And of course, please make sure if you follow the show, do me a favor, hit the 5 stars on your Apple podcast, and be sure to write a review. You can leave a few sentences. It helps me a lot because I want the show to reach as many people as possible. So with that said, let's get on to the show. What's going on, everybody? Omar M. Khatib, your host and head of state for the State of MedTech. I'm joined by another great sales leader, somebody who I've been following on LinkedIn, and I just had to have on the show because he's one of the few people who has really embraced this new philosophy, this new way. Not better way, new way, different way of what it means to be a sales leader in our current healthcare environment, which is kind of a hybrid approach, in my opinion, of both a marketing and salesperson. And that's Jamil Pendleton. His friends call him Jay. I'm happy to say I'm a friend of his, and so I can call him Jay. Jay, thanks for joining us, man. And you're joining us
from
the great my home state, the great state of Texas. I just had to say that.
Oh, well, we love it here, and Texas is great. We have a lot of pride in our state, and I think rightfully so. There's a lot of great things that are happening here. So thanks for having me on. Excited for the discussion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, Jay, there's a lot of sales reps who have been following my content over the years, and even more so now because the very famous meme page, Mad Device Rep, posted some of my content. So a lot of his followers got turned on to me. So Mad Device Rep, whoever you are, thank you.
I've connected sorry to interrupt.
Oh, I've connected with him or her.
I'm assuming him. I've connected with him on a few direct messages, and whoever that is, it's definitely somebody who knows what they're doing, been around, knows the game. I've enjoyed it. Definitely is a funny Instagram follow. In especially just some of the Red Hat gang and some of those things that come from it. I've enjoyed it. And so I love that.
Oh, same here. Same here. And actually, I mean, I'm hoping the day comes where that person has to reveal themselves, but I'm just praying to God that it's like a rep who used to be like, you know, US surgical, like elite in their 50s or 60s, who's just kind of retired and just like, man, I'm just tired. I'm just kind of bored. I'm just going to start making med device memes. I really hope that's the case.
I think he's between 25 and my age, like, or not 25, but 30.
Probably a better bet.
Yeah, I just think
a guy can dream, right?
Yeah, it would be awesome. I just think to some of the humor, some of the references, right? It's pop culture and all I know is that this cat, whoever he or she is better than the spine blogger. Remember that? Did you ever follow?
Oh my God! Yeah. Oh yeah. That turned into a shit show.
It was bad. Quick. I got mentioned in it, dude. It has actually some locker room material that I had. Yeah.
Wow.
I left as an associate, joined NuVasive, and somebody just started saying how it was a waste, how I was a low level guy, was never going to amount to anything. So I printed that bad boy out that was on the spine blogger about me and used it as fuel. And it definitely, things worked out in my favor, built the territory. But, it's just so funny that there was a lot of stuff that I actually learned about the industry, reading it, researching it, and then to actually be, you know, subject to one of those anonymous comments, you know, these keyboard warriors out there. It's pretty hilarious.
No, totally. Yeah. And just, I mean, we'll jump off this topic in a sec, but like, at least when I messaged with the Mad Device rep, this is why I'm thinking like it could be an older person because I forgot what I asked, but they referenced some of these older orthopedic blogs and they're like, I don't want this to turn into that. Those places are just toxic dumps. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Respect. Okay. So whoever this person is, they know that. They know about this stuff. And you gotta be at least like in your 30s or 40s minimum to know about that. So I don't know.
You might be
right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. I just want to help that person blow up that, you know what, they're going to have to reveal themselves at some point, but I don't know.
Love it.
But back to you. So, you know, I want to cover some of your origin story. So for those listeners who are getting introduced to you, like tell us about yourself, like where'd you grow up and everything? How'd you get into Med Devices?
Yeah, sure.
And we'll kind of pick up from there.
Yeah, no worries. So Jay Pendleton and born and raised in Dallas, Texas. And I think Med Device found me. I didn't really go seek it. I didn't even know this whole world existed until 2007. I was dating a girl who's now my wife, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my career and to try to, you know, we had plans to get married and all those things. And I wasn't there yet from a life standpoint, from a career standpoint, and needed to find what was mine. I started in sales at IBM. So I had a lot of B2B experience, but, spent a gap year traveling around the world that kind of opened my eyes to some things, a lot of things about the world, but also about myself. And then when I came back, I met this girl, she changed my world, and then I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. So that's a long-winded way of saying she said, hey, you need to talk to my cousin. He reminds me, you remind me of him. You guys have similar personalities. He works with surgeons and he wears scrubs and he's in the hospital. I said, wow, that sounds amazing. So that's kind of the origin of how I found Med Device or how it found me. So I had a little mentor. It was her cousin. He worked for Synthes in trauma. And he told me about the spine industry and the spine business, and he recommended that I look at that. So did a ton of research. LinkedIn was barely a thing. There wasn't networking like it is today. But did a lot of research online on these companies. Ryortho, right, was one of them. And I read about with the rankings of the orthopedic and spine groups and just flooded myself with information so that if and when I got that opportunity with a hiring manager, I would at least have some jargon, have some vocabulary that I could reference. And that's exactly how it played out. It took a while, took a long time to get to that point. But once I finally got an opportunity with Medtronic, I landed a role with them as an associate sales rep in 2008. So that was kind of how it all began.
Nice. Nice. And so, you know, it sounds you're very much very similar to my career. Like you started off in spine.
Yes. I've always been in spine. Yep.
Got it. Same here. Yeah. Started in spine, hard, like tough part of the industry. Cause you're dealing with a lot of money. In my opinion, probably the most powerful, physicians in the hospital, the only people that might go toe to toe with them in terms of influence would be the cardiothoracic surgeons, but spine is the big revenue maker for the hospital. And so, you know, there's a lot of stories from the trenches, when it comes to spine, and you were there earlier on. I started in 2012.
Oh, nice.
So what was it like for you earlier on as a young rep? Like what were some of the key things that molded your character?
Yeah, it's a great question. I didn't know anything. So I was completely green. And I've talked about this before, but I mean, I repeat myself a lot. So, apologies in advance. I wore my scrub cap over my ears on the first day in the OR, like I was Eminem or some Slim Shady guy walking around. I didn't know what I was doing. It was like super low, you know, and Scott Newcaster, great, great mentor, friend. He's still in the game, still crushing it. Scott told me, he's like, bro, you know, put it over your ears. And then he was my mentor and he was a former nurse scrub. So he had a lot of OR knowledge. And so I think I went as a business sales guy who did a ton of research on the industry but didn't know anything, to into a place where it was purely clinical and value add. And those were the that was just the best way to learn for me was observing Scott and watching, whether it be, you know, switch over the light cable, move around the pedals when the surgeon switches from the left side to the right side, all these things that people that have been in spine, we totally know and most everyone does, but you know, I didn't really think about why and how you could be of value just by being helpful in the room. And so kind of learned under him for a year and was ready. Was 29 years old, ready to go, moved down to Austin and kind of career took off from there. So
nice. That's fantastic. You know, and earlier on, what were some of the key lessons that you got? Like, you know, being a younger rep, like you make some serious mistakes and you get your butt handed to you. What were some of those mistakes that you made that really molded you into the leader that you are today?
Three come to mind. One was be a sponge. Oh. You know, again, Scott's words still ring true. Be a sponge. So when you're in the room, you don't know anything, just shut up and listen. Just stand against the wall and observe, like watch the people that know what they're doing, right? And so now when I walk into an operating room, I feel very comfortable because I've grown up there. But back then, it wasn't that long ago, right? 13 years ago, but just back then, I just didn't know how to be, where to stand, what to do, what to say, all those like kind of posture and just being aware, the awareness that it requires for us to be good at our jobs. And so I would say being a sponge was one of the lessons that I learned that contributed to my success later. And then, you know, there was a couple of things that you always need to be ready and prepared and have multiple backup plans. And so things happen in surgery. It's just a live thing and patients on the table, surgeons need things, plans change. And so those are some of the things that I didn't really anticipate. Again, when I'm researching the industry and reading, you know, annual reports from these big companies or kind of reading what I can from the FDA and clearance of devices, you don't really get to understand like the ins and outs and the intricacies of how an OR functions. So I think those were some of the lessons that I learned the hard way, where something didn't get run and we had to really MacGyver and change the course. And that was on me and my responsibility, regardless if it was an associate, regardless of whatever, that is my responsibility as a representative for that surgeon and for that patient. I took it very, very seriously. So it didn't take too many of those little mistakes that I buttoned up my game and was ridiculously anal and prepared about every single detail, checking cannulas, doing all the things that you got to do because that's somebody's mom on that table at number one, first and foremost. And then secondly, that is your value. When somebody hands the surgeon an instrument, you're probably, as a sales rep who checked in those instruments, one of the last people other than the processing folks who just put in the, you know, sterile indicators to touch that instrument before it gets sterilized. And so don't take that lightly, right? That's a big, big, big thing. It's a lot of weight on that because, right, one kink in the process, right? You understand kind of how everything can fall from there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, you know, again, for those listeners, and I'm going to be clipping this as well for LinkedIn. Can you just summarize those three things real quick one more time?
Yeah, so be a sponge, number one. Secondly, be prepared. And be available. I don't think I really elaborated on that, but just always be responsive. I mean, the people are watching this know this story. I went for a workout, changed territories from like a very, very elective TLIF ACDF type territory to trauma deformity, and it's just completely different. And when we were done in territory A, and then territory B, it's never done. It's never over. You need to be by your phone always, right? And I learned the hard lesson, came back to the, when I was working out at the Globo gym at the time, to the locker and found my phone. It just was ridiculously blown up with text messages, calls, you know. So got in trouble for that one. I think that was strike one or maybe strike two at that point. So really it's just be prepared, be available, and be a sponge.
Got it. Fantastic. And so, you know, I think, you know, you started getting a lot of traction, in the last, you know, year or two on LinkedIn, because it looked like, you know, I guess at Medtronic, Tell us the story, because I don't know the full story as to what happened. But essentially, you started making more content. You came on my radar really quickly because I've been pushing this for, since 2014, 2015. So there's a very small, tiny handful of salespeople who actually embrace the approach and actually do it. You know, so that came to mind immediately.
Nice.
Yeah, tell us how did this happen? Like, why did you start doing that out of the blue?
Yeah, it was actually a lot less than when you said 1 to 2 years. It's been months, man. It's been this calendar year, 2021, when I really focused on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But there's some origin there. So left a sales rep role into a management role and was doing some different things and running a team, running a large geography, 15 regional managers, right? All that stuff. And really trying to kind of figure out how I can make influence. So I can't just be the guy that comes in, has dinners with the doctors. That's not enough. Like when you manage people that are also working with reps. So the people that you're managing are regional managers. That's a couple steps away from the action in the OR where you really need to be to understand the value of kind of the products and where we are with the surgeon relationship and all those things. And so I didn't want to get too far away. So I thought about like, how could I make impact? And I started thinking about LinkedIn and dabbled a little bit, made a few posts in 2020, but really it was the pandemic. The pandemic kind of changed the game because no longer could we gather. No longer were those dinners after the case is even happening, assuming the case was even happening, right? So we had to, all of us, reinvent ourselves. And so as a manager team, we kind of went through and a few of us created this onboarding system. So for people that joined the organization during COVID, where you can't go to headquarters to train, what do you do? How do you learn the technology? How do you learn the culture of the company? And so we kind of developed this online, you know, version of it. And I led a few of those online courses, right? And so we had people on a group Zoom call, right? We had switched from WebEx to Zoom. And so we're teaching them about surface technology, or whatever, robotics, whatever it is. And I just started realizing, wow, this is a transferable thing. And then the third, I guess, indicator for me was I hired 3 people during the pandemic, having never met them, right? In medical sales, it's very important. Trust is everything, right? We are trusting these people to represent the badge, to represent that company. And I hired 3 folks, right? I knew one of them from NuVasive, a previous company, and the other people I knew of, just it's a small industry, as you know, Omar, but having never met them, yet hired them, a huge, huge statement and commitment. And I realized if that trust can be developed to hire someone, and what about people buying this way? And I started thinking about, like, I'm a psychology minor. I really, really get into that, the psychology of people, of why we buy, of what we do. Big Simon Sinek fan and a huge Malcolm Gladwell fan. Got to meet, actually, and Malcolm Gladwell after his fantastic speech at CNS in Austin. If you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. But those were kind of some of those early indicators. And then in 2021, restructuring happened. I needed to show up differently. And so I wanted to kind of own the narrative a little bit and started posting content because I was doing it for my job to try to reach A players, because A players kind of have their blinders on and they're not really focused on picking up interviewer or recruiters' calls. So we were trying to add talent, bring talent into the organization. So I was trying to get on their radar, right? You mentioned it earlier. I've popped up on your feed for whatever reason. The algorithm decides, who cares? But I've popped up on your feed. And so we're connected now. We're having this podcast now. That's value, bro. That's advancing the conversation. Similarly, I tried to do this to grow and advance the conversation with, you know, competitive or experienced reps, and absolutely it was working. We had tons of traction, kicking it over to the hiring managers if and when it got to that point, right? And I also concurrently developed a name and a brand for myself, and so that was totally fine too. It's just part of it. I'm the one taking the risk, being vulnerable, putting myself out there, right? Talking openly about things that I'm dealing with my kids. Which was absolutely just authentic. It's just me pressing record on my iPhone and filming these things and then sharing them with whoever. And if somebody can get something from it, then it's valuable and it's fulfilling as well. And as Joe Mullings and I talked about, it's therapeutic to share. That's another big reason why I post content consistently. I've just got things on my mind that I want to interact and have a dialogue and discussion with you, the audience. And this is the format that I've got to do it.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense to, you know, it's definitely not something that everybody wants to do, which is fine.
Yeah. Right. Totally.
But I wrote, this article like November of 2020. I mean, I've been writing and talking about, but I wrote a very provocative article just called The Death of Medical Sales.
Yeah.
And it started getting traction again a year later this week. Why? Because we're at the end of quarter and people are freaking out. And so they're going to that article to get some insight as to what they can do last minute, you know?
That's great.
And yeah, you know, but what isn't great is that like our industry just doesn't want to learn. Right. The writing's on the wall. It's like five, 6 years ago. Sure. Maybe it was my opinion with a very limited amount of data. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of data, overwhelming amount. Like you can see it. It's on LinkedIn. And so I talk to salespeople where I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to tell you to do anything like radical here. But yeah. It's essentially like, what's the difference between what you normally do, which is you go to a doctor's office. Let's say you're lucky enough to get in. You get mm-hmm. into his office and like you look at the walls like a schmuck and you're like, oh, you got kids, I got kids too. Oh, you got this, I got that too. Yeah. You know, what are you trying to do? You're trying to establish some kind of common ground and trust.
Common ground.
That's sales. So when you demo, they're gonna listen to you.
That's
why
right.
Don't you just do that at scale so that person can learn about you on their own time, little by little. Right? What doesn't that make more sense? For some reason people are resistant to it. Why do you think the our industry is resistant to this?
I don't know. I think a lot of it is misunderstood, right? Some people have said that I'm just some self-promoter, just doing this to build my own brand.
Don't you love that? I mean, I get that sometimes too, but it's like, how am I self-promoting? Okay. Like of all the things I could be doing, I spend time, you know,
yeah,
researching and writing articles. Like for you, you're documenting things. You're trying to help. You're trying to share.
That's
like,
right.
You know, and it's not like you're out there like beating your chest. Like, look at how great.
No,
a lot of your stuff is like, hey man, like I had a tough day. Here's something that went wrong. Here's what I learned from it.
Yeah, and I think that the people that truly know me and get it. They understand that this is actually I'm serving others by sharing my story, and it's therapeutic for me to
totally.
Share. Sure.
If you're in medical sales, I wanted to share something with you that's going to help you because I'm sure that like everyone else, you're struggling. You're struggling to book demos. You're struggling to get meetings. You're struggling to sell. Everybody's quota went up, but since the pandemic, hospital access has gone down. Your ability to engage physicians has gone down, and yet your company probably hasn't even invested in helping you figure out how do you survive this new normal. So your career growth really falls on you. But what do you do? Well, I was in the same situation many years ago, and that's why I turned to using social media and LinkedIn to not only position myself as a thought leader in my industry, but more importantly, be able to sell and influence at scale, whether it's hospital administrators or physicians. And I saw this happen specifically a few years ago when, in the middle of the pandemic, I used LinkedIn to book 35 deals. That's right, 35 deals, 35 different hospitals in 60 days. Right? And that was through LinkedIn. And now LinkedIn is growing in its popularity with physicians. Just this week, I checked with Definitive Healthcare. There's 22,000 orthopedic surgeons in the United States alone. 16,000 of them are on LinkedIn, and over 2,000 of them are actively posting on LinkedIn. That's not counting the number of surgeons who are on there who are just liking content, commenting, and reading. So how do you take advantage of this? This is why I created my program, the Medical Sales Network Effects Program. It's a program that teaches you how to influence and sell at scale without stepping in a hospital. And more importantly, how do you position yourself not only as a thought leader for your company, but really for your career? Because I don't know about you, but this is probably not going to be the last place that you work. So for my podcast listeners, I have a special offer for you. This program is going to be going up in price. It's about $5,000. It's not cheap, right? And at the moment, it's $3,500. At the end of the month, it'll bump up. But just for you listening, I'm going to give you $1,000 off so you can sign up for the program. It's an online course. You can watch the content anytime. Plus, every week, we have these live coaching calls. And people can either attend live or submit questions. And since it's recorded, they can check it out later. And I get all kinds of questions like, you know, how do I do on-demand demos? Or I'm in medical devices. How do I transition to SaaS sales, right? Whatever the question is, I find a way to answer it. And if not, I bring an expert on. So you get those live coaching calls, which you have full access to, plus this amazing content and program specifically made to help you scale what you're doing and help you take your career to the next level. So if you're interested in joining the program, check the link in the show notes below and join today before the price goes up. Can't wait to see you in the program.
But really, what added a lot of fuel to the reason why, to get back to your original question, I mean, dude, I'm off on a tangent now, so you just got to rein me in sometimes.
No. This is what this show's about, my friend. Go for it. Just roll with it.
Get a cocktail. So I started getting a lot of, obviously, I was looking at talent and responsible for it, and there was a lot of inbound from people wanting to break into medical sales, wanted to join this company, you know. So as the one of the gatekeepers, I guess, I was wasting time on these 15-minute Zoom calls. Because even now, like, you got people reaching out, hey, let's hop on a call. That is more than a 15-minute commitment, right? It's prep before, follow up after. Mm-hmm. It's a lot different than just 15 minutes. And other people have talked about it. Like, you got to guard your time. You have to absolutely guard your time. And so I started thinking, absolutely, like, I can't just keep taking these calls, you know, with people that haven't done the research, that don't even know who they are, that they don't know mm-hmm. why they want to get into medical sales. They just want to get into medical sales. Right. So I just don't have the bandwidth to do that. And as much as I want to help people, like, I can't help them if they aren't helping themselves, if they're not prepared for that call.
You can't help everybody, man.
Better scalable way is just post a video saying the same advice that I gave to a few of these people back to back to back. And then Austin, the snowmageddon happened and I didn't sleep. I've told the story. I just was delirious one day and I filmed that medical sales 101 video, which, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I had, like, I think 800 followers at the time, and now I've got close to 7,000. That was in February of this year. So that really kind of put it on the map in terms of eyeballs and awareness and engagement rate, right? And now I look at this stuff because I'm a sales guy, a numbers guy. I look at the Shield analytics, and it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. ROI on that, TBD, I have no idea. I'm not making any money from my podcast. I'm just doing it because I use it as a tool to connect with others and to share their stories again, because if this conversation, Omar, between you and I helps one person, it's worth the time. It's worth the time. Yeah. We're paying it forward to the future generations. And again, somebody's mother on that table is going to benefit from the value that we can help them understand. That is what it's all about.
No, I totally, you know? Look, man, I totally agree with you. 100%. 100%. For people who are listening to this, like, I've just been nodding this whole time because you're absolutely right. And again, like, let's, you know, I want to kind of go back and touch on a few points you made. Like, you know, some people, because these are also things, when people start doing this and adopting this new way, they're going to get some hate. They're going to get pushback from their peers, just like physicians. You know what's funny? For every single rep that reaches out to me because they're trying to do this, I get like two physicians. Most of the people I've helped actually are physicians. One of whom, shout out to Dr. Kasim, but after we got connected like over a year and a half ago, he ended up quitting his jobs. He's full-time CMO now.
It's amazing.
And a lot of it is because, like, he'd call me, he's like, dude, I'm getting hate from like so-and-so I work with, or like, you know, this physician saying that. I'm like, dude, that's from since the time I was in medical school to now, this is the culture of medicine, and it extends to the industry, which is, it's hierarchical. Mm-hmm. This is how it's used to be done. And if you're doing something, you're sticking out like a nail, you're going to get hammered back in. My thing is like, My thing is like, okay, it's self-promotion. Okay. That's true. I'll take that on myself. Yeah. I do a lot of self-promotion. Who else is going to do that for me? Do I have to wait for somebody at a bar to be drunk and like, oh yeah, like Omar Khatib's got some really good stuff. Who's going to promote me?
Yeah.
No. And I realized this back in 2014. That's what really got me on LinkedIn to write articles, was I spent 3.5 years being the marketing manager for a wildly successful publicly traded robotics company. I was like, I shouldn't have any problem finding a job. Guess what I did? All these recruiters, you needed one more year of experience.
One more year of management.
Yeah. And I said, why am I relying on these people who don't know, with all due respect, for every one good recruiter, there's like 99 garbage ones. End of story. The few good ones, you and I both know who we're the ones we're talking about, they're great.
Yeah, they are.
The other ones, I mean, they're not worth their weight in salt. But the point is that you control the narrative. And this is my biggest thing with salespeople. I'm going to get a lot of heat for this. And I always do, because I'd say, I've been saying this every year at every medtech marketing conference, I say, you can't rely on marketing anymore. Because marketing in medtech does not do a good job of developing a market, generating leads, and hanging them over to sales. And so you can either like rely on your quota for marketing, and what they're going to say is like, oh, they're not doing their job. They're not prospecting enough. They're not good at sales. Or you do it your way, and it's like you control the narrative.
Yeah.
Right. If I took you and made you a rep tomorrow and just dropped you in any random geography in this country, you'd be perfectly fine with a laptop and a phone.
Yep. Yeah, I would do it. And there's some really cool tools out there. Shout out to Acuity MD. They've got some CRM that's focused on
You're a marketer. Like, it's in your blood, man. You're like me, sales guy. But like, you start getting down the marketing tools and seeing the software, welcome, man.
Yeah,
you're just scratching the surface.
I'm a sales guy. Somebody coined this. I forget who said this. Like, dude, you're a sales guy, decorated, right? You've done it, but you're trapped in a marketer's body. And so, what's really interesting about this, and the people that I've worked with will know. I mean, you got some people probably nodding their heads right now. Like, sometimes I think I know marketing. I'm not trained in it. I didn't go to school for it. I don't think that I know how to do someone's job. Just like I wouldn't expect them to come in and be able to grow an expansion territory from $0 to $7 million. That's crazy, right? But that's what I did, because I learned the hard way. I struggled. You mentioned it. I almost quit. I almost left my job. I almost left Evasive for SI Bone. I wasn't making any money. I was commission only, and I had to rely on myself, and it changed. But I bring all that up to say, like, I'm not trying to be a marketer, but I know that this is the way. I am now doing a role where it's sales, but it's very much also market development. And right, we have to go out there and find these surgeons, minimally invasive spine surgeons specifically, who are doing that procedure for a certain reason for their patients, right? For maybe it's their practice as well. But they have trouble seeing, and the ergonomics of MIS traditionally is just bad. And so, like, when I saw this company, Vizion, and I was so enamored by the tech, by the leadership team and what they've done in their past and kind of what we're focused on today, Omar, I was like, I can't wait to take this challenge on, because this is something that I can use these God-given abilities that I've been developing and honing this past year, and I can channel that to connect and grow sales. And guess what? I've been here a month and change, and I've already had a sale with the PO that just hit today. Right.
Hell yeah.
Based on it. Exactly. Yes.
And just for people based listening, it's December 28th or what? This is a weird week where I forget what day it is. That one week between Christmas and New Year's, December 28th, 1 month in, you close a deal. That's phenomenal.
I'm excited. In the whole company, you know, it was a great moment. First in Texas with your boy, Chet Donnelly. Shout out to him.
Chet, and you know, he was on the show just a couple of weeks ago. He was my classmate in medical school. We studied together.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I love that guy.
He gets this. We talked about this on my podcast. He gets social media, and it goes even beyond it, what you and I are doing. But as a clinician, as a physician and treating patients, he realizes that, look, this is not about to his patients. It's building a name for him in the industry, for his peers, and for potential partners with industry. And it's fascinating as a private practice surgeon. Like, it's incredible. Love to see it.
It's absolutely correct. And, you know, one thing I would tell you, and I think, you know, so like for me, my thing is that for a long time, I've been possessed by this idea that I want to change how medtech sales and marketing is done. And this is the best way I can do it in 2022, which is at scale to many, like one to many. But and I'm looking for one percenters, and you're a one percenter, and there are proteges that are under you that are one percenters, that they're going to embrace this way, because what marketing really is, and that's why I'm a big fan of marketers who used to sell, is that marketing is sales at scale. It's an accelerant to sales. And you talk to people in SaaS, you know, what marketing is an accelerant to sales. And so when you think of it that way, you know, then the world kind of opens up. The game is very much changed, because doing the old way, which is not, you don't have economies at scale, right? Even when you get to a point, I mean, forget about just doing things online and social media. There's even a point where it's like, you can't just do this stuff digitally, manually. You have to start learning about automations and stuff, which you mentioned Shield App Analytics, great app. Mm-hmm. I use that all the time. But I think the future, the future salesperson is going to be a hybrid of sales and marketing, somebody who's going to have some marketing fundamentals, and they can create content, they can use automation tools, and they're going to know how to look at data and be like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to like, I think the best list, tell me as a sales leader, would you agree with me? The best list that your salesperson is ever going to use is a list that they create, not one that marketing creates or buys. Would you agree with that? Is that?
I don't know. I mean, I hear you, but I also, like, okay, for example, I was talking to a buddy who's with a small startup, and he's like, you know, we need leads. We need, it's like
device startup.
Yeah. Device startup, you know, give me the leads for your 2022. And it's like, well, he apparently comes up with, his list of leads, and there was pushback like, oh, well, these aren't great, prospects. And so it's just like, well, you know what? What makes
him prospect? He made the list.
He made the list, and there was pushback. And yeah, it's common. I've done that. I've seen that where it's like, well, you know, your boss, for example, doesn't really see eye to eye with kind of where you're placing your targets. And you know, don't get me wrong, we are hunting beings, right? Sightseeing, right? We need to be able to see the target and go after it as a salesperson. At least for me, that's how I structure my day, is based on targets. I figure out the target. And
let me amend. Let me amend what I meant. I agree with what you're saying. I'm not saying who they target. What I'm saying is the list of how they reach that person.
Oh, I understand.
No marketer, no company is able to get the email, the contact information, the social media information better than a human being going and saying, these are the channels that I can reach this person. And I think once salespeople start learning to think that way, it becomes so much easier. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're 100% right. But the piece that I think that gets lost, marketing provides the red carpet, right? But the salesperson has to have the customer relationship in order to bring them and likely travel with them to the event to walk them on that red carpet, right? And so the relationship happens, and without it, there's nothing. It doesn't matter how good your messaging and your content is, you need a relationship. So the salesperson has the ability to, right, be there with the surgeon, like show him something on his phone or her phone, and have the conversation in context specific for that surgeon's practice and their patients. And they have to know their customer. They have to understand what that customer has used, what maybe some of their colleagues, right, have used or are using, and using all these different things that are mind share, right? That's why there's some pushback that I've felt from people that reported to me on Salesforce. Why would I download all my knowledge and my kind of mind share or know-how? Why would I download all that to the cloud, in which case it makes me expendable? And I would just laugh at them. I said, you can put all that there, but that's your info that is attached to you. You developed that relationship with the surgeon. And if you let that's somebody come in over the top and take it, shame on you, man. Like, be proud.
Yeah.
Put that on.
I completely agree.
Come try to do what I'm doing, right, in the field, right, when I was a rep.
I mean,
that was my mentality.
I love it. I love it. And I agree. And this is why, you know, again, I went into marketing for a reason, because, again, I like the strategy and everything. But I jive well with salespeople, because most marketers, it's like 1 in 100 have that level of competitive, that level of swagger that you just displayed, which I agree. I publish my marketing strategies all the time out in the open. People are like, dude, why are you doing that? I'm like, homie, I can show you, you know, Bruce Lee movies for like 6 hours straight. That doesn't mean you're going to fight like Bruce Lee.
You're not going to be Bruce Lee.
No.
You try.
No, and if you can, awesome. I got to up my game somehow then.
I'm sorry to interrupt, man.
We should be having drinks right now. We made the mistake of doing this before dinner. We should be doing this.
I know. I can go.
Episode two is coming back. It will be okay. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, we sorry, sorry.
Or we'll do, it live when you're back in Texas, or if I'm out west.
We'll do it live. Hell
but,
yeah.
But I was going to say, is you think about some of these visionaries that are today, Elon Musk, right? Let's just say Aaron Franklin, Austin, Texas, right? They are share Matthew McConaughey. I don't know if he really fits, but just basically they're sharing their stories. Right? Aaron Franklin posts all his recipes online. He teaches. It's actually evolved into a master's class where people pay to learn like all the secrets. But there's plenty, believe me, of free video content on how to smoke a brisket. How do I know? Because I watch it on my iPad. Even though I've smoked dozens of briskets, I watch it on my iPad every brisket, how he cuts the brisket, how he seasons it, right? All the secrets. Guess what? I'm not moving Franklin out of business, right? No. Elon Musk sharing his designs. Like,
yeah. And look, let's look at Franklin's barbecue. Perfect example, which I have yet to have yet. I really want it. So for those
legit
who don't know, yeah, Franklin's Barbecue. It's been movies and stuff. It's like one of the best barbecue places in Austin. It was so successful. An entire street of business propped up around it to monetize the line that goes there, right? Yep. Is it the best barbecue in Texas? No. But they did the best job of capturing attention. And so they're everywhere. I mean, look, he's making good money off of that, those Amex commercials. This is the free money on the table.
That's it, buddy.
When I started writing and I see that with what you're doing, when I was writing about marketing strategies back in 2015 and I wrote about Verve Surgical's marketing strategy and what I thought it should be. Dude, I was a manager. In some ways I shouldn't have been writing that stuff.
Yeah.
There was plenty of other people more experienced, but you know what? Free money on the table. Nobody else was doing it.
Yeah, let me just say this. Like, I don't think that it has correlation. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. When I started posting, I was an area sales manager, and now I'm a vice president of sales. So
I didn't know there's
connection.
Wait, and how long ago did that happen? Can you give us the time frame?
Yeah, so became a director of sales in February of 2021, and then VP of sales in October of 2021. So had to, you know, move companies, but I mean, what else is new? That's kind of med tech, right? You get an opportunity. Sometimes you have to step or leave, or sometimes you're forced out, right? There's just a lot of different ways in which people's stories are shaped. But man, I'm telling you what, like the content and being authentic. I mean, I'm creating digital trust that's scalable, and surgeons have recognized it. They've mentioned it to me directly live where I'm talking to them about our product, and they feel like they know who I am, Omar, because they see me, and it's familiarity. Same thing happens on Zoom calls with groups of people now that we have them. If they've seen or followed me on LinkedIn, then they feel like you can get rid of the first 5 minutes of pleasantries, and I can just listen to them talk about their stories.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, I don't need to spend any time doing that. I'll put money on it that you've heard this. But since you've put your content on, whether it's a surgeon or someone else, have you met somebody, whether it's in person or Zoom, for the very first time, and they say something like, I feel like I've known you, or I feel like I know you already?
Absolutely. Frequently, it happens. And then the other thing that's really rare is I've been stopped in hotels by someone. It wasn't like a trade show. I was in Irvine doing, and this guy was out there doing something else, and he stopped me and recognized me. I've been stopped in hotel gyms. I've been stopped in airports. And then like, what was the other one? Oh, well, this is obvious, but like a conference, right? Spine Tech Summit or one of those things. That's obvious. Like all those people there are likely in the same kind of following, but that's really weird for me. You know, it's just odd sometimes when someone stops you and hey, you've seen your stuff on LinkedIn, but that's a weird kind of byproduct, and I don't really know what that is, and it's not my intention to do that. I don't strive to be like Joe Rogan or anything like that. I mean, I think he's awesome, but you know, that's not the end goal. I just think it's a really interesting dynamic that maybe you felt as well. I mean, with your following.
Yeah, no, I would say so. I mean, look, I'm not gonna lie. Like, do I like the notoriety and getting like admiration, respect from my peers? Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, like I started doing this stuff, you know, back in 2015, 2014 out of a need because I needed a job. And I said, I can't rely on a recruiter to communicate like my ability to think through strategy and everything. So I'm just going to start writing.
It's awesome.
And it kind of, showcase yourself. Grew from there. Yeah, that's exactly right. Showcase yourself. It's great to go back and reread those things and see like how I've grown and everything. But most importantly, again, I've become a deep student of persuasion. And that's, I spend a lot of time reading on that. And again, basic sales, if you look at Zig Ziglar or any of the greats in sales, their whole thing is like establishing trust. Well, how do you establish trust? Familiarity. That's it. And it makes it so much easier with surgeons. Go ahead.
Well, though, I was just going to elaborate on the Zig Ziglar point. You posted that the other day. It hit my feed. I instantly liked it. And not only that, I knew we were coming on this show in the future or in the near future. And I just made a mental note. I'm like, oh, man, Zig Ziglar. Like, I automatically saw a different Omar because that reference and a comment. How weird is that? But it's there's something there. There's something of value that I now know that you're a student of the sales game, that you go to, you know, back, you know, decades for Zig Ziglar or other things, like, and that says something about you. It does.
Yeah.
And it adds to
and I appreciate that.
Yeah, buddy.
And it's not, and part of it is, again, some people are like, you know, I don't want to be an imposter, right? But a lot of it, again, Brené Brown talks about this, about the power of vulnerability. And again, we're both, are you originally from Texas?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're Texan. So Texan to Texan, man to man, I think you can relate to this. There's some power that comes from saying, I don't know, or I'm new, or like showing vulnerability. So I remember a few years ago when I started at Potrero, I had to start, you know, diving into the nephrology community. I've been in surgery community for a long time, specifically ortho spine.
Right.
So nephrology, I was like, internists, like, this is going to be hard. Found out that they're extremely, extremely... Yeah. Like active on Twitter. They have a social media journal club every month. So I go on there. I find it. What do I do? Do I sneak on there? Do I do this? I go on Neff Twitter. I leave a comment on one of the main people's posts like, hey guys, I'm from the industry, love this community. I've been reading the journals and posts you guys. I've been really learning a lot. So looking forward to connecting with you guys. Connected with a bunch of those people, engaged thoughtfully on journal club. That's like, awesome. It's not like I'm reading and trying to pose. Although I did go to school, I knew what I was reading, but I would ask questions, and that community takes you in because you're like, hey, this person's like putting themselves out there. They're engaging with us thoughtfully. They're trying to learn. And most physicians, even especially surgeons, when you say, hey, like genuinely, like, can you teach me? I want to learn. They'll do it. Right.
That's exactly right.
That's surgeons, the best part
about mentioned this before, man, that surgeons love to teach, a lot of them, most of them that I've come across. In some way, shape, or form, right? And sometimes if they've got residents and fellows, they've got their large teaching institution, that, you know, thirst is quenched. But sometimes if they're not, if they're private practice, or if they're just, you know, in a different situation without fellows and residents, then some they want to offload or they want to share their knowledge and be able to take somebody under their wing. And, you know, fortunately I was the recipient of a couple of those surgeons that just took me under their wing and told me the whole process from, you know, history and physical to the differential diagnosis to algorithm of how they choose what they choose to treat certain pathologies. And the minute I started thinking in the surgeon's terms of pathologies and like, they got to treat their patient's leg pain, you stop flashing all the features of your products. Nobody cares about lordosis or screw pitch or any of that stuff. And you start understanding, okay, well, this surgeon needs something that's going to improve their X. And then you go figure out what that could be. And you're solving problems. Then you're bringing value. Then you build a true relationship, a partnership. You know, from there, it's just fun and service.
Do you feel like a lot of salespeople misuse sales training and knowledge, let's say the challenger sale or spin selling, and they use it the wrong way? And if so, can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't want to give away all the secrets out there, but there's some things that I'll catch myself doing.
Let's talk about the dumb things that you see salespeople doing. Don't hold back any punches on this.
You know, well, I don't get, see, that's the thing. I don't get I don't get to see a ton of other salespeople. Like, I don't do the ride-alongs and stuff. Like, we're just building, we're just starting, we're just building out a market before we build a sales team. So, you know, I'm not there yet, but I've seen some things, you know, the cringeworthy things where you get, like, it's just the used car salesman where it gives salespeople a bad name. And, you know, upselling can be nauseating if you kind of see it and witness it when somebody's in the room and it's like, hey, you want to open up their 5 cc's? You may need some for the back. It's like, come on, bro. We all know you're chasing the quota. The doctors know it too, right? The doctors know it too. And, you know, you got to be mindful of the global cost of care and just be grateful to be in that room, being in a position where, you know, you get to be part of that patient and their story.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, I think that's for better and for worse. You know, I knock this industry a lot on certain things that it needs to get better about just because I love it. But, you know, it's a great industry to be part of. I'm very proud of the work that I get to do and the people I work with and everything. I mean, you know, we're doing things that are generally going to help people versus, you know, I have friends who are in tech. They're like, I'm working on this new, like, reverse algorithm that's going to change the world. I'm like, for what? They're like, yeah. Oh, for, like, compression. I'm like, okay, cool. Probably not. Yeah. Like, you know,
well, believe me, man. I mean, I started at IBM and I loved selling. I love the entire process, customers.
I didn't know you started at IBM.
Yeah. 4 years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
How, sales. Do you feel like that contributed like in any positive way to who you are today? Like what were the big things you took out of IBM? Cause it's funny. I've got a phenomenal training.
Yeah, it was great. It was great training. I've got a video that I'm finishing that I'm going to, I think, post tomorrow. I'm not sure, maybe if I can, or the next day. But I referenced the IBM days. I mean, it taught me how to sell. And what I mean by that is like how to truly listen and ask questions. And right, a lot of dialing for dollars, a lot of cross-functional team working with different internal teams working with the customer, right? The glass house, the CIOs, and then their IT directors. And, you know, it's interesting because when you're B2B, it's a different world and you're selling, but to parallel to medical sales, you know, I look at it as a very different, but also there's so much that can be gleaned. In fact, there's tons of people that came from B2B sales that did it, that have done and are doing great in medical sales. I think it's an easy transition, right? If you find your niche, you know, but I think I just learned a lot about how to manage a territory, you know, run it like you would your own business, P&L, all the different things. And then again, you're working for a large organization. So that was my first of many large organizations that I worked with. And so the bureaucracy that comes behind it, the tape, the extra steps, the just head scratching moments for certain policies, you know, you start to kind of realize, all right, well, this is just part of it. And that was my first job out of college. You know, it took me a few months, but that's another story.
Got it. And now, you know, I was going to say for the most part, maybe with the exception of NuVasive, because you were there when they were still a little bit smaller, but for the most part, would you say this like new role that you're in right now, this is the first like real like foray into the startup world that you're in, like how do you like it so far?
Absolutely. This is like nothing I've ever done. And, I absolutely love it. Now it's the honeymoon phase. We're still real new. So she's super pretty and, we're having a lot of fun and these sparks, yeah. Right. But, I think that, you know, NuVasive was super fun too. 2010 to 2017, good run. Like I kind of grew with the company as they professionalized and developed a fullback. And that was really fun. But yeah, the startup mentality of like, nobody knows Vizion by name, that a lot of people don't. Now it's changing and
not
starting
yet.
Not yet. And that's going to be an honor to build this with the team. The team that I'm with, it's just phenomenal. The guy, my new boss, CEO and founder, he's done this a few times. He sold businesses both to Medtronic and NuVasive and Integra Codman Neurosciences. So he sees opportunities that need innovation. He creates these companies. Investors trust them with their hard-earned money, and he treats that money, and I've seen it up close and personally, he treats that money as his own. And that's why he's been successful 3 for 3 exits. And so, you know, for me, it serves a need for this MIS spine community that I love and I have relationships and networks in, but I'm also learning like a ton of how to grow a business and how to truly lead a team. And I think that still it's early, but that information and that those lessons that I'm learning are only going to be valuable for me long term.
No, I totally agree. And I tell people, especially when they leave like a large corporation, if they've been there like 10, 15 years and stuff, you know, either the startup, it's either a one way road where you get into startups, you're like, oh my God, this is me. And it's hard. It's not, it is a rough deal. You got to get used to going to bed knowing there's like 50 fires going on every night for like a few years. Like it's just part of the game. But if it gets you up in the morning, you love it. You love the grind. You love to build. It's awesome. Otherwise, man, I mean, I knew somebody who left a Fortune 100 to go into the startup world in medtech. Went back like 9 months later. He's like, dude, I can't deal with that, man. Can't do it. And that's fine. There's nothing, not to knock those people, there's nothing wrong with it. But like, it, you know, when you're at a Medtronic, a J&J, any of those startup, you just see the fun stuff. You have no idea what the life is like until you're actually in it. And by the way, Jay, I want to be mindful of you because I know you have to cook dinner for your family, but can you go a little bit, can you go a little bit longer? Yeah, we got to wrap up.
Let's keep going. I kicked them out. They're at a friend's house right now. So until I see them and walking back, I think we're good, but I got to fire up that grill here in a little bit.
There we go. Yeah. And you give me the word and we'll have you back. And next time what we need to do is a little like sales happy hour. We got to have a couple of beers and like really get into it. So that's what we're doing next time.
Okay. I'll enjoy that.
Yeah, it's funny. I interviewed a VC, Bruce Cleveland out of Wildcat, who is the CMO at C3A, a huge publicly traded company. He just like announced his retirement, but I had him on and we did it over drinks. Nice. And I had like one too many scotches. It got out of control. And I was like, oh man, like I don't know about this. And he listened to it. And he's like, this is great. He's like, my wife said this is the best interview I've ever done. I'm like, I got to do more of these.
You're loose, man. I mean, I had one with a surgeon. We went for an hour and then we shut off the recording. And then he's like, hey, do you mind if I go pour a drink? I was like, yeah, it's a great idea. I'll see you back here. Zoom was running. We weren't recording. We just went and grabbed a drink. And
it's the best.
I wish that we would have recorded that second session. It was insane. So great.
There's a reason why Joe Rogan's podcast got bought for $100 million by Spotify.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right.
Really long drinks and getting high on camera. Yeah.
Wow. People share a lot.
That's a goal. Let's put that as a goal for both of our podcasts is that to get one of the top five CEOs and chairmen of a medtech company on just absolutely plastered. And they're just going to be like, dude, whatever. I don't care about my PR department. Just publish it. Just do it.
Yeah. Well, so that's an interesting detour there too. It's the compliance, right? So you mentioned the big companies and it's just tough. It's tough. I would say back to your point about marketers, I think their hands are tied, right? And I've developed relationships with a lot of these people and they're working hard, but a lot of they have these guardrails of what they can market and how they can market.
You're a solid dude, but let me just say they do it to themselves. Yes, they do it to themselves.
Let me just say this.
Look, I get it. The regulatory departments, regulatory legal is rough. I've had to deal with those same departments. There's ways to manage it. I've talked to marketers who they disable. This is the dumbest thing there's one company, they knew who I'm talking about. They changed it. Because I started making fun of them, they disabled comments on their LinkedIn post, which that's like the number one way to grow on the algorithm. Yeah, they disabled comments, and I asked one of their marketing people, "I'm like, why did you guys do that?" They're like, "Oh, it just, you know, we don't want to take the risk of like a competitor leaving a comment, and we don't have time to manage comments." I'm like,
"What?
Hey, with all due respect, if you struggle with that, please, I'll pay you a lot of money just to show me what you're doing. No one cares." I was like, no one cares. And I think it got around that I was just like constantly mentioning them, making fun of them. And they're like, okay, we're going to turn it back on. Their page blew up, by the way. They're doing really good.
Well, I like that about you. That you just like me, Omar, We're not afraid to call the baby ugly if it's ugly, because that's something that you've got. You're helping them, right? I love criticism, right? If somebody tells me after a speech, I give speeches, right, to groups and motivational stuff. And if somebody says, and I always ask, like I have critics, hopefully that they'll tell me straight up, like, how was that? What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? Right? Because how else are you going to get better? And so this company, you did them a favor. Right. And companies that I've worked for in the past, they know who I am, and I'm going to call the baby ugly. Like, yeah, this is not at all, I think, a great idea for how we launch at NASS or whatever it is. Like, and look, it's not my job. You know, events that people say, hey, like, we got a whole team that's working on NASS, Jay, slow your roll. I was like, okay, but if you really want to make the splash, let's make the splash.
Yeah, Sorry. Exactly, man. This is my thing. I tell marketers all the time, what's your number one resource? And they're like, oh, it's this, that. I'm like, no, it's a sales team. Most expensive research resource. And you got to utilize it. And I want, like, I tell people all the time, like my last company, I told the head of sales, I'm like, look, I know we have a sales team. We have a marketing team. I said, and I made one Slack channel. I was like, but we're one team. It's a TMT, the money team. I was like, so if I hit, let's say, whatever goals I have, leads or whatever, but you don't hit quota, I failed. I don't care about my goals.
That's right.
And so I think most marketers need to think of it like that. And they need, you know, I think they would receive a lot more support for their ideas. Because there's a lot of marketers, marketing departments, they have ideas for stuff and sales just like trashes it. But part of it because like marketing does, they sit in the ivory tower and they just want to tell sales what to do, how to sell. And none of these people even sold, they never even done a ride along.
Yeah, you can sniff them out. Like I've seen leaders that are they're good leaders, but they've never really walked the walk. You know, the best ones are the ones that even if they have not walked that walk or carry that bag. And I think that's why I get the respect that I get is because I've carried that bag. I've been that associate. I've been the grunt,
the
low level, and I've risen all the way up, and I'm still climbing. But I think that people that get in the field and say, look, like, I want to meet your customers. I want to engage. It's like, even if they don't know, just the fact that they're trying, right? And they're not just sitting there managing by a spreadsheet. They're actually getting into the operating rooms. Even though they're dealing in deer in headlights, right? They're back to where I was with the scrub cap over the ears, not knowing anything. You love the effort. You love the fact that they're there. They're in the field, right? And so those good leaders, that even if they've never carried a bag, the surgeons know that they really truly care about that relationship. And there's an engagement factor that I've seen. Those are absolutely the good ones. Those are the good ones.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to get to something I haven't brought up. I can't believe we've gone this whole time. I haven't brought this up with you yet. But before I get to that, I mean, quoting, and I try to keep spirit alive, but one of my great mentors, who is a titan in sales, Chris Sells, and of course his last name is Sells, U.S. came up through U.S. Surgical, you know, one of the top VPs at Intuitive in its day, Mazor Robotics, etc. You know, before he passed, he told me, he's like, Omar, he's like, as a marketing leader, if your sales team is not demanding that you jump on calls with them at the beginning to talk to customers and to demo because they trust you that much, they respect you that much, you're not doing a good job. How many marketers can do that? And I tell marketers, like, yeah, it's hard, it's extra work, but like, that's what it takes. Now, I want to ask you a question. You have this great podcast called Sultan of Sales. Phenomenal title. I love it. Being Turkish with Ottoman blood, like, I love it. And smart, and from a marketing standpoint, brand-wise, there's an SOS, you know, emoji. Oh, yeah. So I love that. Tell me about Sultan of Sales. Like, you've done quite a few episodes now. Like, what inspired you to start a podcast?
Yeah, June 1st of this year was our first episode. And, you know, we've gone over 50 strong. I think I was a guest on a couple of them. And I just thought, this is always something I wanted to do. I already had Sultan's of Spine originally. And then I shifted to Sultan's of Sales, and then I bought up them all the SOSs, right? So you mentioned Swagger earlier, Sultan's of Swagger, right? Sultan's of Surgery, Sultan's of Service, Sultan's of Sport. You never know. So URLs are kind of my.
Oh, you bought those donate.
All
smart.
Of them.
Yeah. Nice.
Why not?
Nicely done.
I'm SOS. No, that's right. And you mention it.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
We'll see. I'm surprised they, so those were all available. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. I mean, I'm probably someone's going to go out there and try to like find all the ones I didn't get and then try to figure out which businesses I couldn't predict. But, yeah, dude, I love the dialogue that takes place, right? Particularly one-on-one or small groups, but just, I felt like, again, the pandemic and all these things that we needed a means to connect. And I had no idea I'd be doing this job now with a huge geography where it's like, I can be connecting with anyone in a split second through a LinkedIn direct message, and then we hop on a call. LinkedIn even has their own embedded video chat option, which I showed Lucien Blondel, and him and I have connected. I talked to him. He's in France. We frequently connect. Why not, right? It's a great opportunity to just engage. And so some of these things are awesome to record and share with the masses. Others, it doesn't go away, like FaceTime. The Zoom or whatever, it's so important to see someone and get the reaction, the body language that takes place. And so I wanted to specifically do video podcasts. And so I'm only on YouTube right now. Again, I'm not trying to go for all the downloads. I wanted to eventually get on Spotify and YouTube and Apple or Spotify and Amazon and Apple and all the other audio only because, you know, I use Spotify. I recognize the advantage of driving or working out or walking the dogs and you want to listen to a podcast, and it's difficult with YouTube. If your phone gets silenced or whatever, it just goes away. And it's annoying. I get it. But I really think that there's a valuable piece to the face-to-face video. So anyway, like why I did a podcast, I love to connect. Honestly, I think it's a great exercise in listening for me. And I'm talking a lot, but I'm the guest on your show. And I try really hard not to.
This is right.
Not to overtalk.
But I had you on. You know, I had you on for that reason because as a host, you don't get to talk. You have to do a lot of listening. So I was like, I know there's a lot of people that want to hear what this guy has to say. It's like, I want him on my show. So I'm glad you came on. And you've had
it's
Sultan of Sales, but you've had surgeons on your show.
Yes. Yes. So he was always kind of intended to be med tech at the kind of the inflection point of technology and medicine and all these great things that are happening specifically in spine robotics, but I mean, it's happening everywhere, but spine robotics, it's in its infancy, of data, AI, ML, right? All these things that are going to just be infused in surgery in a very, very near future. I wanted to bring surgeons on. I didn't have any clue that by bringing surgeons on, I could develop a relationship with them and then ultimately a sales relationship transaction close deal with them. I did not. That was not ever an intention. So for any surgeons
out there,
it's a
byproduct. It's a byproduct.
Well, you get to know one another, right? And it's a way to develop trust. And then like I love to be able to promote again these private practice docs like Chet or Dr. Braxton, any of these folks that have come on, even some people that are large work for the hospitals have come on. I love to be able to just understand them a little bit and share that story of them because I think they're so fascinating, man. Like I've gotten to work with some really, really bright people, these surgeons, and I've always valued my time. And I feel like I've kind of upped my own personal and professional game because I'm working with, these aforementioned geniuses and just really great people. And so I think I love the connection point with surgeons specifically. I've always loved that. And I'm getting to do more and more of it today and more than I ever have. And which is fascinating and phenomenal. So yeah, the podcast is great and I'll always do it. It'll be something that, just kind of is the Sultans of Sales until we figure out, where that leads, if anywhere, but it's probably just going to be a side gig for me for now.
Until you wake up one day and you get that Spotify money, you get bought out.
Yeah.
But well, I'm going to make a prediction for your show, by the way. Okay. I'm going to make a prediction. There's a 2022 prediction for your podcast. I think through your podcast, you will land some deals, not because you interview a surgeon, but because of one of the guests you have on that show, they endear themselves to you and they know a peer and they're like, hey, you should check out this guy's company. And you'll get connected, your sales team will get deals out of that podcast. It's not going to happen overnight. It'll happen over time. That's prediction number one. Number two is when you start growing and hiring a sales team, you're going to be overwhelmed with applications. You probably may not even need a recruiter because there's going to be all these salespeople that not only have learned from you, but are willing to forego a higher salary or commission somewhere else because, like, man, I want to go work under this guy and work for him. Plus, you're going to, like, the effectiveness, the strategy, the tone, all these things are going to be done because rather than you having to set a sales training, do all these things, these people can go and listen to key episodes, learn the philosophy, the strategy, the approach, and they just go and just, you're going to have like this amazing team.
No, oh, man, that's
those are my predictions.
I love it. Oh, I think the first one, it's already kind of quasi happening or happened just through connections.
Really?
Yeah.
Just and you started in June, you said, June. So you're already seeing the effects. Amazing.
Yeah, but not to the extent of like, but I think it's going to continue to happen, right? Like as this thing scales and, you know, as more and more surgeons, I've had some surgeons approach me to come on the show, which any surgeons out there, particularly spine surgeons, but any surgeons, if you want to come on, I'd love to have you on. Like this is what I love to do. I'd love to connect with you and listen. And, I won't talk near as much as I'm doing today. I promise.
I'm loving all of this. Trust me. If you were not a good guest, this would have ended a long time ago. I've been like,
all right,
Jay Pendleton, everybody. Thank you so much. No, man, I'm loving it.
No, it's good. My kids are still jumping on trampolines, some neighbors. So I'm loving the free time myself. But, you know, I'll just say this, man. Like, yeah, I love the second prediction is really humbling. And I'll say, it feels good to hear, right? I mean, I was smiling when you were saying that. I was kind of getting excited about it, thinking about it. But I've got to check my ego at the door. It's not about me. It's if I can be valuable, if I can leave a legacy, right, for my boys, and that's what I'm here to do. If I can help people along the way, I think it is fulfilling. And again, I mentioned earlier, therapeutic to share. But I got to keep ego at bay because, you know, as a strong Christian man, I mean, that's just, this is not about me. I'm just a messenger here. I'm just the vessel.
I totally agree, man. But what I will say, and you are a humble guy again, like, and I can imagine as somebody as a Christian man, right? That there's this idea of like, you know, that you try to be Christ-like, to be humble, down to earth. I mean, so hearing somebody say like, oh, you're doing this stuff just to promote and everything. And it's really, you're trying to share, right? Yep. But what I would tell you is that there are, and you don't know them, you might not ever meet them. There are young men and women who are professionals who look up to you, admire you, and they're dying just to even spend a few minutes with you at a conference, just to listen to some stories. I was one of those people. When I was younger and I started my career, I couldn't wait to go to a conference so I can spend time with a Chris Sells or Chris Prentice, just to listen to them. That's why, yeah, I had Tony Recupero on yesterday because, you know, that was, I think, barely the second podcast he's ever done. When do you get to hear from people like that? And for you,
you're
laying this body of work where people today get to just listen to these stories and hear you, yeah, out. And then more importantly, see your change and growth over time. Like you were a director and, you know, just a few months ago, you're a VP now, and seeing this growth over time, like I would pay an exorbitant amount of money to listen to a Chris Sells when he was like a manager, when he was a VP.
Oh yeah.
You know, to hear all those stories. Cause those, yeah, those stories are lost, and I'm trying my best just to find people. Like I'm trying to get Leon Hirsch on the show from U.S. Surgical because, like, that's our history, man. Mm-hmm. Your and mine history.
That's,
but no one's written, you know. So that's how I see it.
Storytelling's important. It preserves the legacy of those people. I love that. This has been a really fun too, and therapeutic for me to, I've said that word a lot, like maybe I need some therapy. You know, but it's been really good to just kind of like unleash a little bit. Like we're kind of at that week where everybody forgets what day it is between Christmas and New Year's. And it's been fun, really fun to connect, and great questions. And, you know, this whole discussion is something that I already cherish, and I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you know, again, we've held you up from dinner, so we're going to wrap it up, but last part of the show, we got to do quick rapid fire questions. We got like two or three of them. You can answer them as quickly as you want or as long as you want. And then after that, we call it a day, and we look for that reunion show when we have you back on. Maybe we'll do it with a few other like sales leaders, and we just have some drinks, just
that's,
you know,
good.
talk stories. We'll see where it goes. So, okay, my first rapid fire question for you: during the pandemic, 2020 through 2021, Look, we Amazon primed a lot of stuff, man. We bought a lot of cool stuff. Look, I'm looking at your Shure mic, your headphones. So you bought some cool stuff. What is the most interesting and cool thing you bought for under $200 from pandemic till now? It could be a book. It could be a gadget. What comes to mind?
Yeah, you know, honestly, nothing comes to mind of material. I did.
Purchase, oh, come on.
honestly, I did. Okay. I purchased James Clear's Atomic Habits, fantastic book. But that's how I've lived my life during the pandemic. I don't know if you know this, but I lost almost 50 pounds from lockdown, basically.
Wow.
April of 2020. Changed my life. I started working out, started just the daily disciplines, right? The atomic habits that James Clear talks about. And so I would say if you need to put it on something, it's his book. But, you know, the three kettlebells that I had in my garage that were collecting rust and dust I purchased, you know, when my youngest son was born, like that was sunk cost. That was already here. So I just went outside on the patio and just killed the dad bod. So that's what I'm most proud about when I think about,
that's amazing,
you know, 2020, and it's been a foundation for, you know, new confidence and wins on the career front. So I think it's just one of those things I'm grateful for. And the pandemic will always be, you know, a lot of day drinking early on in March, and it was crazy. And then April was when I decided enough's enough. I got to get back into shape.
I love it. And again, like, you know, so I'm of Islamic background, but obviously not that religious anymore because I do drink. But I was raised in a Christian school, and so okay. You know, one of the quotes that always stands out to me is like God helps those who help themselves. You know,
love that.
And 2020, I said it was gonna be the best year of my life, and it turned out that way. So I love that. And awesome. 50 pounds, man, that's amazing. So you took care of rapid fire question number two, which is what, unless you have something else, but the question was like, what book do you feel like you gift most often or recommend to people? Would it be James Clear's Atomic Habits, or is there something else?
Yeah, or I really like all of Gladwell's stuff. Probably if you haven't read The Tipping Point, that's the first one I would recommend to anyone. Adam Grant, Give and Take is another favorite. And then, yeah, James Clear's Atomic Habits. Those are three.
Nice.
Although Brene Brown, what was the book you mentioned?
Yeah, Brene Brown, I mentioned her earlier.
Yeah, I've been meaning to read hers because one of my buddies, a Navy SEAL, is a big fan and kind of formed a company based on a lot of those.
Oh, interesting. Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. So last questions was, you know, throughout your career, you've had no doubt a lot of mentors, right, who helped you, inspired you. But there's probably a few of them that told you something that was very painful, hurt you almost, but it made you better. What was the most painful but memorable thing that a mentor has ever told you?
Does this have to be professional career, or does it?
No, man. Can it could be anything.
Athletics.
It could be athletics. It could be your parents. Whatever.
Dude. Honestly, it was. I hit puberty early. I was faster than most kids. I was on the Olympic development program, ODP soccer. I was really good when I was a kid.
Wow.
And then I didn't practice because I was better. And everyone, once they hit puberty, they caught up to me and their skill level surpassed me. So I went from being like a right midfielder attacker scoring a lot of goals to my college or my high school coach telling me that he was moving me to defense. And it was just like such a, it was a gut punch at the time. And it's not that, it's the lesson that I had to learn. I had to learn that, hey, like, you're not always going to be scoring the goals. Like, you just need to be a good team member. And then like, just kind of like stomaching that, and wasn't the best player, didn't need to be, but it was a good team player. And I think teams are a big, big part of my career, my success. It's always been part of a team. It's not me. It's the surgical team. It's the management team, leadership team, and all those types of things. So I use that as like something that really that stuck with me, that when that coach said like, hey bud, you know, we're gonna move you to marking back, and I think it's gonna be good for you, good for the team. And you know, it was a gut punch to take. I don't know if that's a good answer to your question, but
I think it's
what
a great
comes
answer
to mind.
I love that. All right, so last question for you is that I want you to pretend that for the next year, I say billboard, but since we're so digital, let's say I take out a smartphone notification. So this notification is going to pop up on the phone of every single sales rep and sales leader in the US. Okay. And this message, they're going to see it every single morning. What message do you put on that notification and why?
It's a great question. I would say there's two things that come to mind. Number one, be authentic. Number two, there's three things that come to mind. Number one, be authentic. Number two, tell your story. And number three, get after it. That's what I always say. Just get after it. Just do it. You know, my dad gave me this. It says, do it now. And I wear that and look at it every day. And, you know, don't put off something, you know, for tomorrow that could be done today. You know, that mentality. So just get after it. Whatever it is that you need to do, just do it. And don't get caught standing on the sidelines waiting for it to be perfect. It's never perfect. So take action, right? And tell your story, right? People are interested in you and you have a story to tell. So tell it, you know, with authenticity. Be yourself.
Wonderful. Couldn't think of a better way to wrap up. Jay, stay on for a few seconds afterwards. Hey, everybody. This has been Jay Pendleton. I'm your host and head of state, Omar M. Khatib. This is State of MedTech. We will see you all next time. Check out the links below. I'm going to leave Jay's handles in there and a link to his podcast. Check it out. Give him a follow on LinkedIn and check out his podcast. We'll see you all next time.
Thanks, Omar.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The State of MedTech. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib. Do us a favor. If you like this episode, share with somebody and go ahead on Apple and Spotify, wherever you are, leave a 5-star review. Type a few nice notes about us. This is how we get other people to find the show. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.